First Name Sports starts now.
We're kind of on a first name basis around here.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Okay, let's get started.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
What's going on, America? It's a Tuesday afternoon on the Sports Map Radio Network. That's right, I got that right. I'm sure a lot of people maybe woke up today, thought it was Monday. But hey, that's a good thing if we are further along in the week than you may initially have thought, as everybody across the country, I'm sure, returns to work, after the holiday weekend. And we are back in the saddle from 2 to 4 Eastern Time, 1 to 3 Central, every weekday here on the Sports Map Radio Network. And so we begin with the conclusion of the Eastern Conference Finals in the National Basketball Association last night, as the Miami Heat are your Eastern Conference champions for the second time in four seasons. This was their third trip to the Eastern Conference Finals in the last four seasons. Ironically enough, all three Eastern Conference Final matchups for Miami in that time were against the Boston Celtics. And the Heat go to Boston. They take the path less traveled after being up 3-0. And they win in Game 7, their last chance to close it out, 103-84. And we will get to the Celtics. As I was show prepping today, I was like, gosh, I got a lot to say about this game. I might as well just do two segments on it. And so we will eulogize the Boston Celtics in 10, 15 minutes. But I have to start with the Miami Heat, because while the Celtics, I'm sure, gained a lot of respect with their mental fortitude and their resolve to get this to a seventh game after being down 3-0, Heat culture was on full display last night. Not once did Miami look like a team that was about to be on the bad side of history. Not once did the moment become too big for the Heat. Not once did the crowd intimidate the Miami Heat. All that nonsensical talk about the 0-4 Red Sox. And I kind of hinted at this off the air last week. That always kind of irked me a little bit. The Red Sox were taking down the evil empire, New York Yankees, who were running baseball in the late 90s and early 2000s. And that was the beginning of the changing of the guard in Major League Baseball. This was an 8 seed, the Miami Heat, who obviously are on an amazing run into the NBA Finals. But I thought to compare these Boston Celtics to the 2004 Red Sox just because they were trying to come from 0-3 down was a little lazy. However, back to the point, Miami did not let the moment get too big at all last night. And they did not let the dramatic fashion under which it lost Game 6 with the Derek White tap-in at the buzzer, that did not carry over either. And, you know, how many times do we see this in sports? I can think of a couple of baseball examples right away. For the older crowd, nobody really remembers Game 7 of the 1986 World Series, because the signature moment was Game 6 and how it ended Mets, Red Sox, and the ball getting through Bill Buckner's legs. Here comes night, and the Mets win. The great call from Vin Scully as the Mets force a seventh game. They would win the seventh game, but the moment that we all remember is Game 6 of that series. Fast forward to a moment I was alive for in Major League Baseball in 2011. David Freese hits a walk-off home run in Game 6 of the World Series after the Cardinals twice were down to their final strike against the Texas Rangers. Cardinals go on to win Game 7 in a relatively nondescript fashion. So we don't really remember those Game 7s. And the signature moment, the wow moment, was Game 6. And that's what Game 6 felt like for the Boston Celtics on Saturday night. And John Belmer, I was talking to you a little over the weekend. You were like, well, there's no way the Celtics can lose now, right? I mean, I think we all felt not only did they get to a Game 7, but the way in which they did it, with Miami being so close to the NBA Finals and the ball rattling out from Marcus Smart, only for Derek White to be in the right place at the right time with 0.1 seconds left when he gets the shot off. And, you know, there was some controversy, I guess, about the Jimmy Butler when he got fouled by Al Horford. Did they add too much time on the clock? Because the clock originally stopped with, I believe, 2.1 seconds, and then they reset it all the way to 3 seconds. And so you add 0.9 of a second to the clock when Butler shoots those free throws. And then, of course, with 0.1, Derek White gets the ball off on the putback. All of that. And if you would have said, yeah, somebody's going to win by 19 points in Game 7, everybody would have thought Boston. Boston was a 7-8-point favorite last night in that neighborhood, depending on your sports book. So for Miami to go in there and win like that is everything that their Heat culture is about. And it's an amazing group of men in that locker room to be able to flush it 48 hours later, get on a plane, and go play as convincingly as they played last night. And Eric Spoelstra, I think this is the best coaching job that he's done in his career, and that's really saying something because Eric Spoelstra is the best coach in the NBA, I believe. And he has obviously been through a ton with Miami. He's 52 years old now. Started with the Heat in 1995 as the video coordinator. I mean, what a story. Obviously working his way up under the tutelage of the great Pat Riley, who's still there in the front office at 78. These two guys, as the centerpiece of the operation, you know, make everything else work. And it's why a market like Miami, which is not a great pro sports market. I mean, just look at how many people show up to Marlins games, you know. But yet they're able to attract superstar after superstar there. All because of that rock solid infrastructure. Pat Riley, 78 years old, was a legend of Kentucky in his playing days for the great Adolph Rupp. And now goes on to, in his basketball career, professional basketball career, he has now been a part of 25% of the NBA Finals. That's insane. 3 as a player, 10 as a coach, and 6 as an executive. So that's the kind of brain trust that we're dealing with here with the Heat. A coach and an executive who really know what they're doing, and sure enough, the executive is a former coach who groomed the now current coach, Eric Spoelstra. 6th time in the NBA Finals for Eric Spoelstra. And it's not just the brain trust. I mean, this filters down to the players on the court. We can talk about the superstars that they've been able to get there. Obviously, Jimmy Butler recently, but of course, LeBron James and Chris Bosh joining Dwayne Wade. But how about Jimmy Butler doesn't like to call them role players, but how about those guys, Caleb Martin, Gabe Vincent, guys that are second round picks, undrafted players. Who, you know, Max Strus, who they're all able to get important minutes out of in big spots. They're doing all of this without Tyler Hero, mind you, who might be able to come back for the NBA Finals. It's just a very impressive organization from top to bottom.
They were also short Victor Oladipo as well.
Thank you, yeah. Here is Spoelstra after the game in a very poetic quote, I feel like, very deep, about how they had to move on after Game 6.
You know, these are lessons that, you know, hopefully we can pass along to our children, you know, that you can develop this fortitude. And sometimes you have to suffer, you know, for the things that you want. And you know, Game 6, the only thing, you know, that we could do is sometimes you have to laugh at the things that make you cry.
Sometimes you have to laugh at the things that make you cry. For the team that suffered that heartbreaking loss on Saturday night, to be able to laugh at that and to be able to just say, huh, who would have thought the ball bounces right to Derek White, right place, right time. For that mindset to emanate throughout their locker room and on that plane, I'm sure, going up to Boston, gosh, it may not have been on that plane. They may have gotten on the plane Sunday morning, locked and loaded, ready to go. Because they were talking very confidently after Game 6. Jimmy Butler, Eric Spoelstra saying they're going to go win. And, you know, John Belmer and I were talking about it in show prep that they kind of had to just, they have to say that because they're still alive. But how many of us actually believe that? And for them to go out and play the way that they played last night shows that they believed it. And they're the only ones that have to believe it. It does also make me wonder, last point on the Heat before we hit the timeout. Why aren't more teams trying to copy them? I mean, maybe you might say, well, there's only one Pat Riley. But there's only one Bill Belichick, and everyone tries to hire Patriots coaches in the NFL. We'll get to some of the coaching news a little bit later in the association, but off the top of my head, I can't think of a Spoelstra assistant that's been hired somewhere else. I'm sure maybe it has happened, but I would have thought by now that there would have been this extensive coaching tree that we all would have known about.
Yeah, you would have been hearing about the Spoelstra coaching tree for sure.
You know, it's interesting. So, just a thought that I had there about, well, they have this great infrastructure, this great leadership, great player development. Are they just better at it than everybody else? Maybe. So congratulations to the Miami Heat. They are your 2023 Eastern Conference champions. And they are now, but that was a stupid story, by the way. People making a big deal of, they got their flight booked to Denver. Yeah, they're on their way to Denver because what were they going to do? Go back to Miami for a day, if they won? When that came out yesterday, I thought, no, like, this is just standard operating procedure. All right, we will get to the Celtics side of the equation as we'll talk about the losers from last night on the other side. First in sports, Sports Map Radio.
Miami's got the ball with 10 seconds left. The clock is winding down. The Miami Heat's improbable postseason run continues. After blowing a 3-0 series lead, the Heat stop the Celtics in Boston and make history themselves. They become just the second 8th seed ever to make the NBA Finals.
You're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
There's Dave Posh on ESPN Radio last night. By the way, one of the more underrated basketball play-by-play guys, I think, is Dave Posh. He had the great cardiac Kemba call at the Big East tournament in 2011. Like Dave Posh, voice of the Arizona Cardinals. He had the call last night as the Boston Celtics are eliminated in the Eastern Conference Finals, 103-84. And I have to say, we didn't have a show after Game 6. Game 6 was, I think, the game that really began to change the tune for most people, I felt like, about the series. If you weren't already, there were a lot of people that after they won Game 4, people were like, well, hey, they're going back to Boston for Game 5. You win that one, it can't be any closer than 3-2 after 5. So I think while there were probably some people that always felt Boston's the better team, they're going to come back, I think once they won Game 6, it became very real for people like myself. And I know John Belmer felt the same way, that like some of us were a little hesitant to think, oh, the Celtics really going to do this? Like, they're down 3-0. Miami blew the doors off them in Game 3. They're going to win 4 in a row here. And Game 6 is when it started to feel real. But let's not forget that last night was yet another example of who the Boston Celtics have been most of these NBA playoffs. And that is a wildly inconsistent team that just takes way too many nights off. Jekyll and Hyde, ebb and flow, up and down. And you cannot win like that routinely to the point where you win an NBA championship in the postseason. Like, it's just not going to manifest itself into the ultimate prize if in playoff games you're just saying, eh. Game 5 against the Sixers, eh. We'll just get them in game 6 and 7, which they did. First few games, you know, game 3 against the Heat, down 0-2, eh. We'll just channel our best inner selves and when our backs are against the wall. And they did until they didn't last night. It's this weird vibe with the Celtics where you look at their roster and say, that's the best team in the NBA. And then you watch them play some nights and it's like, how do they even make the playoffs? Because they were horrible last night. They were horrible in game three. They were horrible in game five against the Sixers. And then in some of these other losses, they just choke. Game two against the Heat, Grant Williams stares down Jimmy Butler, and then the Heat run away with it down the stretch after Boston had a double-digit lead. They lose game one to Philly without Joel Embiid at the beginning of that series. They lose game five to Atlanta in the first round when they had like a 13-point lead in the fourth quarter. Not exactly championship DNA from the Boston Celtics, and we've seen examples of it in each round of the playoffs. And eventually, it was going to get them. People like to talk about how amazing they were with their backs against the wall, not just in this series, against the Sixers, winning game six and seven, a pair of elimination games, and then winning game six and seven against Milwaukee last year in the second round, two more elimination games, game seven on the road in Miami last year. All of these examples of the Celtics finding ways to win with their backs against the wall. But don't let that cloud the fact that their backs were against the wall quite a bit these last couple years. And why is that? Because there's just something about this team, again, the Jekyll and Hyde ebb and flow up and down, that is happening too frequently, and it's too much of a roller coaster ride. And sometimes you just have to go out there and clobber the other team and play like you are better. And the only game in which we saw that from start to finish from the Boston Celtics was game five. They won game four, but they were down by six at halftime of game four. Game six obviously could have gone either way. And while I just opened the show singing the praises of the Miami Heat, this was still an eight seed. At least that was the number next to Miami on the score bug. And you got down 3-0. And only then did you start to play your best. You got down 3-2 against the Sixers. Down by two in game six on the road in Philly with 5 minutes left. And in the nick of time, Jason Tatum starts to make some shots. And then he goes, humbly, I'm one of the best basketball players in the world. Okay, well, then show it a little more consistently. And to Tatum's credit, he had 51 in game seven against the Sixers. But you just wonder, and this was my thing with the Celtics. I really started to feel this as the Sixers series played out. Because I thought, yeah, they'll probably beat the Sixers in five or six. And then the more the Sixers played their way into that series, I thought, well, the Sixers could really win this. And they didn't. But then you see them get behind 3-0 to Miami, and you're saying, well, it's the same kind of laissez-faire. Like, what are we doing? This is the playoffs, Boston Celtics. And you can't rely on Derek White heroics every night. Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, far too inconsistent for my liking. Joe Mazzulla, like, some of this, I think, falls on him. But I also think for as much criticism as Joe Mazzulla has taken in these NBA playoffs, stars got to show up. Like, the NBA is about stars. It's about your best players playing as such. Routinely in the playoffs. That's why Jokic every night brings it for Denver, and Murray hits the big shots, and Butler seemingly always there for Miami in the guts of these games. And Tatum and Brown both, last night Brown was atrocious. They just ebbed and flowed too much. And I understand that they're still, I guess, young. I think they're 24 and 26, something like that. But for as much as we look at other de facto star players like James Harden and most of Carmelo Anthony's career and say, well, those guys aren't going to be able to really step up in the big moments for your team, game sixes, game sevens. Outside of game seven against the Sixers in the last round, we haven't seen enough of that from Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. So the bottom line is, whether you're taking nights off at home like they were last night, like they were on the road in game three of this series, whether it's a night off or you're just choking a lead down the stretch, neither one of those things are signs of a champion. And the more concerning problem is when you allow it to snowball and when you dig yourself an 0-3 hole, when you get behind 3-2 to the Sixers and you lose games 4 and 5 in that series after you had a 2-1 lead. Far too many signs of, okay, we had one bad game, but not being able to flush it the way we talk about Miami and the way they were able to move on and go up to Boston and play as well as they played last night. So I will say, while I think that the Boston Celtics kind of proved, you know, to quote the late Danny Green, they are who we thought they were, and the he did not let them off the hook. They won the game last night. I think they kind of proved, yeah, they are who we thought they were in terms of this inconsistent high seed that's got a lot of talent but isn't going to show up every night. I don't think that, like, there's talk about breaking up the Tatum-Brown tandem. I don't think that's the move. I understand that the salary ramifications of what's next for both players will result in, if you keep them together, both of them chewing up a larger portion of your salary cap. But let's not forget that this is a tandem that's been to 4 Eastern Conference Finals now since they've been drafted together. Tatum was a 2017 first rounder, Jaylen Brown a 2016 lottery pick. So in Tatum's first year, they were in the Eastern Conference Finals, lost to Cleveland, East Finals in the bubble in 2020, lost to Miami, NBA Finals last year, and another East Finals trip this year. So I think sometimes we're too quick to want to move on from superstars when they don't win at the highest of stages, particularly in big sports markets. Remember, there was a lot of buzz about, well, could the Sixers trade Joel Embiid after the... And I think that a lot of that is just like Monday morning quarterbacking, like immediate reactionary takes to losing big playoff games in which, of course, you want your teams to win. But I don't think that Boston should be moving off of either one of these guys. Doesn't mean that they won't. You know, I talked about the Ime Udoka stuff earlier in this series that was coming out at a weird time about how Jaylen Brown and others on the Celtics kind of still have their allegiances towards Udoka. And maybe Jaylen Brown just wants a change of scenery. But if I'm the Celtics, I want to try and keep these guys. Like, why is it bad that you've been to 4 conference finals and you've been to 1 NBA finals? They haven't won the whole thing, but they've still done a lot. I would hold on to them. We'll talk more about that and all things Celtics with Bobby Krivitsky from SI and a SportsMap Radio contributor, as he will join next. This is First Name Sports on the SportsMap Radio Network.
With First Name Sports on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Live from the SportsMap Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
Okay, let's go out to the Progressive Guest Line and bring on a guy who contributes to our network and covers the Celtics for Sports Illustrated. He is Bobby Krivitsky, kind enough to take a few minutes out of his Tuesday afternoon to join us. Bobby, good to have you aboard. How are you?
Hey, Greg, I'm doing great. How's everything on your end?
Absolutely, yeah, doing pretty well myself. And let's just dive in with what happened last night for the Celtics. Tight, you know, same old nonsense at home that we can't figure out. Like, how do you explain it?
Yeah, a little bit of everything, where on one hand, they've admitted and they've addressed it internally, and then they don't seem to actually handle it on the court, is that they come home and they feel like it is tailor-made and set up for them to win. And as they acknowledge, they relax a little bit. They take their foot off the gas. And especially when you do that against a team like the Heat, you're in trouble and you open yourself up to a loss. And then Jason Tatum gets hurt on the first play of the game, so he's compromised. He said it himself. He was, quote, a shell of himself, and he wasn't milking it or anything like that. He just genuinely was on a bad wheel the rest of the game. And so you go from averaging 30 points to putting up 14. That's a huge difference right there. I mean, he scores 16 more points just to get up to his average. It's a 3-point game if you just look at the final score. And if he's putting up 16 more points, who knows the swing and the ramifications of that on the outcome and what else changes as a result of the butterfly effect. And at the same time, Miami thoroughly outplayed them, and all of the Celtics' worst problems resurface to the light, as they have at times this series and throughout this playoff run, starting with foremost getting away from a defensive identity that keyed their success last season and got them to the finals, and this year being so reliant on three-pointers, it's more fickle, and that shooting variance ultimately doomed them, and it took away from their focus defensively last night.
Okay, so when it comes to things like lack of focus defensively and these, you know, kind of showing up to the building and expecting to win mindset, how do you assign the blame there? I know Joe Mazzulla has taken a lot of heat, no pun intended, during the playoffs, but I don't know. I kind of look at the star players, and I know Tatum was hurt last night, but Jaylen Brown just didn't show up. Like, I think that's a star player thing before it's a coaching thing. Do you agree?
Yeah, without a doubt. Now, I will say this, that the identity shift stemmed from Mazzulla. But at the same time as the players, you have to take control of the ship. And they did, after they went down 3-0 to Miami, they said, hey, we need to get back to a defensive identity. And there were times throughout the season and in the playoffs where they had that same approach, but they could never consistently stick with it. And you thought maybe, well, they're on this three-game run here, and they've got Game 7 in their building. If ever there was a time not to stray from it, to stick with what got you to this point, but it just wasn't the case on Sunday. And I do agree, first and foremost, that falls on the players and it falls on the stars. And the most damning stat to me from last night is not the threes as much as it's dictated who wins and loses in this series. It's Jaylen Brown, career-high 8 turnovers.
Yeah.
His team needed him to step up, and he just wasn't there for him.
Yeah, and you know, we'll get to the Jaylen Brown future stuff in a minute, but just in terms of the vibe last night, it also felt, and I think Malcolm Brogdon pointed at this postgame about how it felt like, to the Heat's credit, they were the looser team. They were the team kind of playing freely. And do you think that maybe some of the chatter and some of the excitement about being the first team to come back from 3-0 and the 0-4 Red Sox stuff, like, did that play some bad mental mind games with the Celtics a little bit?
Well, that was one of the things I was curious to see with the Heat specifically, is you could see them getting more and more tense as the series was getting away from them. But then once it's 3-3 and it's Game 7, sometimes a team in that moment is able to relax, and it's almost like that pressure just lifts off their shoulders. And if any team is capable of that in the NBA, it's the Miami Heat. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that we saw that unfold yesterday, where they went from being tight in Games 5 and 6 to much looser and more relaxed on Sunday. And with the Celtics, I do think there was a bit of nerves that came from being on the doorstep of making history, and from all of a sudden you go from the underdog back to the favorite. And I think this team is at its best, even if it has to lie to itself about being the underdog, that's when they're at their best. And it wasn't something that they could really buy into in yesterday's game, because everyone was picking them to win.
Bobby, I think that was my biggest problem with the Celtics all playoffs long, was that it's just a very flawed and ultimately, I think, you know, preventable way of winning a championship in terms of how you play in the playoffs. And that's, well, we'll just kind of relax and turn it up when we need to. Like, no, these games all count the same. You don't get more wins in the series in Game 6 and 7 than you do in Games 1 and 2. And, you know, they certainly, you know, toyed with that notion quite a bit against the Sixers. They were able to survive, and then obviously not able to dig themselves out of a hole against Miami. So I just think that for whatever reason, there wasn't enough urgency early in these series, right?
Yeah, and that's the prime word right there, urgency. And last year, their whole playoff run, there were golden opportunities squandered. And so what I kept having to write about was, you just wonder, does this come back to cost them at some point? And sure enough, they get to the NBA Finals and they run out of gas and their bench is nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
This year, you know, they should have finished off the Atlanta Hawks in 5 games. You could argue they should have swept them, but certainly they're playing at home. The Hawks don't have DeJounte Murray. I spoke with people in that organization who did not expect them to win that game, and sure enough, they pull it out. The Sixers series goes 7. They lose Game 1 on their home floor with Joel Embiid on the sideline. And ultimately what happens is, when you go to 7 games, it wasn't the fatigue, it was that Jason Tatum, more games, opens yourself up to injuries as well, and he hurts his ankle on the first play. So this team, certainly, that lack of urgency for the second postseason in a row has come back to bite them.
Yeah, and, you know, you look at the two teams in the finals. Last night was the first Game 7 for Miami, and the Nuggets haven't had to play a Game 7. So I definitely think there's something to that. But as far as the Celtics and where they go from here, Jaylen Brown made that All-NBA team. He's eligible for the Supermax. He kind of downplayed the questions about his future last night. So what happens next for this franchise as we head into the summer?
I think it's a negotiation. It's important to remember that they are the only team, even if he's traded, that can offer him $295 million, that full veteran Supermax. I think, given the ramifications and restrictions of the new collective bargaining agreement, that they're going to see how far down they can get him to agree. Now, maybe he doesn't want to be in Boston to begin with. He wants to be 1A undisputed. Maybe just even trying to lower the offer from 295 is insulting enough that it solidifies in his mind that he wants to leave. But maybe he's open to a compromise. And if so, the Celtics could at least play out next season and then decide how they want to reshape this roster. There'll certainly be changes this offseason no matter what. I think that their intention is to keep Jaylen Brown, but then, of course, they might have to revisit this matter next summer.
You know, Bobby, one thing that I also wanted to touch on here was I feel like in the NBA, particularly in big sports markets, and we heard this a little bit after the Sixers were eliminated, some rumblings about which teams would have enough ammo to trade for Joel Embiid and might he request out. And now in Boston, we're hearing this talk about Jaylen Brown's future. I think there's a rush sometimes, again, in these bigger sports markets to move on from these stars a little too quickly when they don't get to the ultimate, you know, top of the mountain. And especially with the Celtics, with the two J's here, Tatum and Brown, they've been to four conference finals and one NBA finals. I don't think that's anything to hang your head on and be disappointed about. So I would, if I was a Celtics fan, I'd be fine with running it back and keeping these guys around. Do you agree with that notion that sometimes in the bigger sports markets, these stars, you know, fans get impatient and want to run guys out a little quicker than we should?
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. I remember my first time coming on, I told you I have a lot of Philly fans in my life, and I can't tell you how many trade proposals they've given me, whether it's to send Joel Embiid out,
it's
to bring in. It happens all the time, and it's not just Philly. Obviously, it's all these big markets, I would say especially in the Northeast, but the Lakers fan base is a prime example too. I mean, how many Photoshop superstars have we seen over the years in the purple and gold? And so with the Celtics, you're exactly right. And it's something I've spoken with Jaylen Brown about before, that him and Tatum together have gone to the Eastern Conference Finals four times in 6 years. We're two wins away from a title. And Jaylen Brown is 26, just entering the start of his prime. Mm-hmm. At 25, Tatum's not even there yet. So I certainly think the best approach is patience.
There he is, Bobby Krivitsky, the SportsMap Radio contributor, covers the Celtics for Sports Illustrated, kind enough to join us on the Progressive Guest Line. Bobby, thank you for your time. Enjoy the offseason.
All right, man. Appreciate it. All the best.
Okay. We'll take a timeout, and we'll come back. Let's hit the ice on the other side as the Stanley Cup Final is also set. The Vegas Golden Knights are once again headed to the Stanley Cup Final as they win the West last night in Dallas with a 6-0 throttling of the Stars. We'll discuss. Saad Youssef is going to join in about 50 minutes. He covers the Stars from The Athletic. Lots more to get to here on a Tuesday afternoon. First Name Sports, SportsMap Radio.
You're back with First Name Sports on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Live from the SportsMap Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
All right, let's hit the ice and discuss the hockey game last night. There's not a whole lot to discuss, at least as far as the game. And that's the same way with the Heat and Celtics kind of propping up the Heat, eulogizing the Celtics. Not a lot in either one of these games that happened that we can really dissect, which is unfortunate. It's always, I think, better when you have these games be competitive and enjoyable to watch from start to finish. But beggars can't be choosers. At least we got to a sixth game in the NHL and a seventh game in the Eastern Conference Finals in the NBA, because both of these series were 3-0 after three games. And in the case of the Western Conference Final in the National Hockey League, the Dallas Stars laid another egg last night. They laid an egg and got shut out at home 4-0 in Game 3, and they get shut out at home last night 6-0 as the Vegas Golden Knights punched their ticket to the Stanley Cup Final. And really, as far as the game was concerned, to Vegas' credit, the Knights were ready to play. Much the same way we talked about the Heat being able to kind of just flush the Game 6 loss and get on a plane and go to Boston and play their best last night. That was the Vegas Golden Knights in Dallas. As they, Bruce Cassidy said it after the game, he thought it was their best game of the series, best game of the playoffs, I think he said. They lost to Game 5, in which I thought that, you know, Dallas, to its credit, on Saturday night, Dallas played a good road game, and Dallas appeared to be getting better with each game. Like, Game 4 was their best game of the series, and then I thought Game 5, they were better than they were in Game 4. And so I think there was definitely a and I think anytime you win that first road game when you're trying to come back in a series, in the case of the Celtics, it was Game 4, and a lot of people thought, okay, well, they're going back home. They can win Game 5, make it 3-2. In the case of Dallas on the ice, once they won Game 5 on the road, then they're going back home with a chance to even the series. You start to believe a little bit, right? And even not just, I mean, maybe the locker room, they'll, you know, cliche it up and say that they always believe. But as far as the fans, as far as outsiders, we might look at it and say, hey, now all of a sudden it's 3-2. They're going back home for Game 6. They could really do this thing. And it at least, and that's again why, even though last night's games in both the NHL and the NBA were not all that entertaining, it was nice to at least be able to get a little bit of a tease to stretch things out a little bit more, and, you know, not just have snoozers in all four conference finals, because the East final in the Stanley, in the NHL was a sweep for the Florida Panthers, and the West final in the NBA was a sweep for the Denver Nuggets. Anyway, I think that Vegas showed you last night, again, championship DNA in terms of being able to play your best game on the road in a challenging circumstance when you were facing some adversity. And they get a quick goal right away, and then they get a power play goal, and see, then all of a sudden you have Dallas chasing the game again. And I think, to Vegas' credit, when they were able to jump on the Stars the way they were, they smelled blood in the water and took full advantage. And that's what good teams do. Kick you when you're down. And it's not always, as, you know, impartial fans that just want to see good games, you know, it doesn't always end up being the most exciting game to watch. But you got to give the winning team credit to be able to muster up a full 60 minutes the way Vegas did last night. And, you know, even after the power play goal from William Karlsson about halfway through the first period, like, you're already kind of, I was watching, you know, going back and forth. I was at a bar last night that had both games on, and my head's swiveling back and forth between the TVs. And when I saw 2-0, I kind of already started to think, oh, you know, because I was at Game 3 of this series when Dallas lost 4-0. And it started to feel very similar, just in terms of how quickly Vegas was jumping on the Stars and challenging the Stars in terms of limiting their high-danger scoring chances. And all of a sudden, 2-0 feels like 4-0, 3-0 feels like 6-0. Final score ends up being 6-0. Aiden Hill, the goaltender for Vegas, deserves a lot of credit, because I do think that a lot of what's in front of him is very good, and Vegas does a good job of preventing high-danger chances, and they let you get shots on goal, but not necessarily the most high-quality scoring chances. But he hasn't really let in many softies either. And, you know, you never know how that could have changed the game script a little bit had there been a cupcake goal that squeezed by and Dallas maybe made it 2-1 or 3-1, and you still looked up at the scoreboard and said, it's a game. That never happened. And again, remember, Aiden Hill was not the goaltender at the beginning of the playoffs for Vegas. That was Laurent Brossoit, who got hurt in, I think it was the Winnipeg series, maybe the Edmonton series. But Hill's been in there for a little bit now and has played well. So Vegas looks good, and they're deep. They have good, ample, high-end talent. And I think for Dallas, and this will be a good question that I want to ask Saad Youssef, Stars writer from The Athletic, who will join in about 40 minutes. I think it's interesting to see which side of the equation he comes down on, because Dallas lost two games in overtime in this series, and it lost two games in blowout fashion. And which of those, you know, two do you think is more of a reason why the Stars are not still playing hockey? Because on one hand, you can look at their two eggs that they laid at home and say, well, you just can't do that. Like, you cannot get shut out by a combined 10-0 in games 3 and 6 and, you know, expect to be a Stanley Cup team. Like, that's not going to happen. So if I had told you just that, boom, signed, sealed, delivered, in two games in this series that Vegas wins, the combined score is going to be 10-0, you probably would have thought, oh, yeah, Dallas is in a whirlwind of trouble. But on the flip side, if they had just gotten a split of those two overtime games to start the series in Vegas, this thing's 3-3 and there's game 7 tomorrow night. So I think that depending on how you comprehend losses, you can look at it either side of the equation. Unacceptable clunkers that you play at home, or not able to close the door on the road in overtime, particularly in game 2 when they were up 2-1 with like 3 minutes left. Eichel makes a great pass from behind the net to hit Jonathan Marchessault for the game-tying goal. And then Shea Theodore wins it in overtime in game 2 for Vegas. So it's I don't really have an opinion there as to was it the blowout losses at home or was it the overtime losses on the road. But that's definitely a question I want to ask Saad. And I also think that coming into this series, we said these are two very evenly matched teams. And I think, you know, certainly in the other four games, games 3 and 6, Vegas, as I said, outscored them 10-0. But you saw enough of in games 1, 2, 4, and 5, evenly matched play to where neither team was going to win 4 in a row against the other, because these teams were very evenly matched. And in a lot of ways, it's a surprise that Vegas was able to win 3 in a row to open the series. Because I do think that, you know, this series was not representative of the game script that, or the series script that it followed with a 3-0 lead for Vegas. And, you know, fittingly then it ends in 6 instead of just 4 or something. So I think all along we thought this would be a long series. It ends up taking a little bit of a circuitous path to get to a 6th game. But it ends up being a 6-game series between two pretty evenly matched teams. And I just think in the end, neither team was going to blow a 3-0 lead because these teams play closely enough with the opponent to where it's going to be hard. Regular season, playoffs, preseason, you put these two teams on the same ice sheet, you're not going to see many 4-game winning streaks for one team against the other. Lastly, just as far as the Vegas impressive start to the origin of the franchise, it goes back to the 2017-18 season. They have made 2 Stanley Cup finals now, and they've made 2 more conference finals, or like the 1 year it was called the Stanley Cup semifinals because the league was all realigned differently due to COVID. But they've made the Final 4 of the NHL twice, and they've made the Stanley Cup final twice. So you can't ask for much more, and they're favored to beat the Florida Panthers. And we will certainly break down the NBA Finals and the Stanley Cup final later in the week. Game 1 of the NBA Finals on Thursday night in the Mile High City. Game 1 of the Stanley Cup final not until Saturday in Sin City. But certainly a picture-perfect start to the history of the Vegas Golden Knights. And if they do win the Stanley Cup, they will make NHL history as the fastest expansion team to win the Stanley Cup. Something that I'm hoping personally doesn't happen, because that's a record that my Philadelphia Flyers own, having won the Stanley Cup in 1974 as a part of the original, the first expansion for the league in 67, when we went from the original 6 to, I guess, the next 6 or whatever they call that, the second 6, I've heard it called. And the Flyers were a part of that 67 expansion, and they won the Cup in their 7th season of existence in 1973-74. This is the 6th season that the Vegas Golden Knights have existed. So they are going for a little bit of history as they square off with the Florida Panthers. Somebody's going to make history. It's either going to be the fastest expansion team to win the Stanley Cup in Vegas, or it's going to be the franchise first for the Florida Panthers. So certainly looking forward to both of these series. Denver, Miami in the NBA, Vegas and Florida in the NHL. Not how you drew up maybe either one, but I think both look pretty good. Some more NBA news to get to on the other side. First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.